Teacher evaluations, should they be tied to pay raises? The governor's chief of staff moves on. What's it mean? A court order to recognize gay marriage in Indiana, problems with a government website, and an appeal to FEMA. That plus oversized art in Carmel and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending April 11, 2014.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.
This week, new statistics show the majority of Indiana teachers are effective in the classroom, and that has some people crying foul. State educators had their first evaluations under a new, more stringent system passed back in 2011. The numbers show 87% were rated effective or highly effective. Only 3% were found to need improvement or ranked as ineffective. The other 10% did not receive a ranking. Those positive findings have Representative Bob Boehning, the chairman of the House Education Committee, scratching his head.
I have a little bit of concern. Obviously, we were hoping to have a true reflection of where everybody fell, and it's hard to believe that. I mean, it's good to think that everybody would be in those two categories, but I think that it's probably not realistic.
Is the teacher evaluation system flawed? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwannis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV Statehouse reporter Jim Shellum. Mike McDaniel, how do you square the teacher evaluations with test scores and graduation rates?
Well, I've always believed there are a lot of very effective teachers in Indiana. I believe in the system. I really do. But this system doesn't work. And the problem is, what I'm worried about, quite frankly, is that most teachers are going to look at these numbers and think that everything's okay with the teachers and the system. But when you have self-evaluation, basically what this is, no two school districts had to do this the same way. And so anybody can use any system they want to use. But you apply this system to some part of graduation rates and improvement, and it has to be applied towards pay increases. So in a system where
right. Nobody who didn't get an effective rating got a pay increase.
Well, right? That's
or
right.
Can get
well,
one.
87% were either effective or highly effective.
Right.
8% was
3%
Need improvement.
Need improvement, and less than 0.5% were deemed ineffective out of 55,000 people.
Right.
So the problem is you're not going to have a system where a school can evaluate themselves and worry about trying to pay teachers based on that evaluation when the tradition has always been across-the-board increases based on contract negotiation. So I don't put a lot of stock in the way this was done because it's apples and dump trucks district to district.
Did this backfire on the people who created it?
This is the legislature's baby. They're the ones that passed this legislation. And what's interesting to me is after years of blaming teachers for everything from snowfall to everything else and no raises, and then they now can remove ineffective teachers much more easily than they used to be able to, and now they're finding out that these teachers are rated effective, and they're disappointed. You know, there are war on teachers. Just hasn't been successful
enough. Do you believe those numbers?
Well, one of the things that teachers are saying is that there are a lot of effective teachers, that the problems with test scores and graduation rates are because students aren't there to learn.
Look, you can point fingers, and we've been had more fingers pointed on this than you can even imagine. There are problems. But this is the system that was created. And if the teachers are evaluating themselves, then they're only doing what they're allowed to do. It's not a good system. I don't think it's a good idea to rate teachers based on students' performance, students based on teachers' performance. I think you need to have a baseline, and you need to try to exceed that. And to tie, I think, compensation to performance, while it sounds good in theory, ends up with a rigged system much like we've got now.
Exactly.
So any doubt that this will be changed?
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt that it will be changed. You talked to Chairman Banning of the Education Committee, as you did in your video introduction. He's pretty clear, and I think he's going to have something to say about it. You look at people who've weighed in from, say, the state chamber. Frankly, people on both sides of the political aisle are saying something needs to change. Because to echo what's been said, when you look at 55,000 teachers in this pool, and only, what is it, maybe 1,500 or something, or 3,000, obviously I need some work on my math skills, we're falling
it's
into
probably
that.
Probably your teacher's fault.
It may have been my teacher's fault. They, believe me, they don't want to be held accountable for me. But you have a school, for instance, up in Goshen, that was an elementary school that had an F rating, failing rating, but not one single teacher fell below effective.
But that doesn't, but what you're ignoring on this is, first of all, you can't have a building that has a rating. Okay, the students change every year.
But there is one.
Well, I mean, but that's what's so ridiculous about the rating system
standards.
For schools.
You got to have some standards to rate these, or you're never going to get any improvement. I mean, that's what this is all about. I mean, the whole system, the whole idea of trying to pay people based on merit was to get people that need help to get help, and people to have incentives to do a better job at their craft.
Funding.
And for people who are very good at it to be rewarded for being very
good
at it.
You cut
and those
teacher,
are good goals to have. But
you
can't let people
raises.
Do it district by district by district.
But the problem, Mike, is when you try to put a one-size-fits-all on this and you leave these kinds of loopholes in it, you're going to end up with this kind of crazy problems that you've got where it doesn't make sense at either end. You've got to have a system where people are accountable, but you can't have a system where it's the same here and the same there. You have to give professionals
the opportunity.
So we're going to
do one class basketball for school.
Or we're going to
do class basketball.
Are you
saying,
Mike?
Are you saying there's no need to go back to the drawing board?
I absolutely think they're going to go to the drawing board. I think you're going to see strict across-the-board standards, because you can't make comparisons between districts and how people are doing, if you're letting every school district do it their own way.
And you've got to take into account what they're starting with. So when you measure that improvement, it can't be X school in the suburbs versus an inner city school with kids that are disadvantaged. They have to improve. Excuse me, Michael.
Well, that's what I'm
saying.
They
have to improve in the inner city. I grant you that.
Those same,
but you can't do the same standard for both.
Those
that's
same
correct.
Kind of considerations are made in when they do budget work.
Yeah,
the same things will be done when they do evaluation.
And at the same time, what they did is cut teacher training funding and then make sure they get no raises.
And you don't want to give good.
We can draw, but one thing that some people are pointing to, they said this is proof positive that those who said that administrators would somehow torpedo certain faculty members or undercut them, or there'd be a vendetta. This is proof it's not. I beg to differ. How do you know that that 2 or 3% weren't the subject of vendettas or torpedoes?
What I did find out is that they wanted everybody to get a rating.
I'm just saying that's a conclusion. I don't see how you can draw.
Administrators got negative ratings in this thing.
Yeah, I don't know.
Probably not many.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, should teacher evaluations be tied to pay raises? Your choices are A, yes, or B, no. Last week's question was, are contribution limits a good idea? 83% said yes, 17% said no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. The top aide to Mike Pence announced this week that he is leaving state government to help plan the governor's political future. Bill Smith has resigned as chief of staff and will become a political consultant. Mike Pence will be his first client. It's a move that fuels speculation that Pence may pursue a run for the White House in 2016. Here's Smith.
Well, I think the governor has always said that, you know, he doesn't believe his life is his own, and he's open to wherever the future leads, and that continues to be the case.
Even if I said don't read anything into it, people still would. The speculation game is too tempting.
A political consultant Pete Seat there, and Delaney, is Bill Smith's move out of the ordinary?
Well, what are we, 15 months into the administration? That's a little early for a re-election campaign, certainly. I'm just glad you put his picture out there so I can finally see what he looks like. I mean, I've heard the name. I've never met anybody who saw him face to face.
Well, he's kept a low public profile.
Low.
But he's been the guy in charge of Mike Pence's affairs for a long time.
That may be. And obviously, you know, they haven't – I don't know whether he's running for re-election or running for president. Maybe he's running for president, and that's why he's out so soon, because he certainly doesn't need – he certainly doesn't need 3 years, which is what we're talking about, to get a re-election campaign going. So he must be running for president, it seems to me. And, you know, that's – we'll see where that goes.
He's putting a fundraising operation in place either way, right?
Well, sure. You got to look – one thing we know for sure, that Mike Pence is going to be on the ballot in 2016.
Somewhere.
Yeah, somewhere. And more likely than not, governor for re-election. And it's not out of the ordinary for a chief of staff or somebody who's the most trusted confidant that a political leader has to leave to go do something like
this. A year into the
different about it? I did it almost 18 months in advance before John Mutz ran for governor.
18 months, not three and a half years.
It's not three and a half years.
Excuse me, it's
not even. It's a little over 2 years. So,
I see.
You know, you're wrong with your math again.
but
this guy has been his most trusted advisor from the time he's been in Congress. Second only probably to Karen Pence does he have the ear of the governor of the state of Indiana. And so you got to have somebody in this spot that you know has your best interest at heart all the time. And it's only natural for him to go do this and do it at this time period.
The governor refers to him as family.
Yeah, his family.
Yeah. You can't avoid the speculation. They're not really trying to quash it.
Oh, no, I mean, you hear the protestations about, you know, if we say this, there will be speculation. And if we say that, tell me a politician that would not be flattered on the one hand, and there's probably some political value to being the subject of that kind of discussion. We talked about it in the context of Mitch Daniels back before he decided definitively that he was not going to run for president, and I think the consensus here was, why not keep your name in the game because you're more relevant to the national conversation. You're in the limelight, so to speak. So I
brings attention to what you do
here.
Sure. Also revealed this week, Mike Pence is going to give a speech in Wisconsin in May. Mm-hmm. Is that significant?
Well, yes, it's significant because there are other leading contenders. Paul Ryan, I believe, is going to also be there. And it's also kind of a payback because Governor Walker had been to Indiana last summer to do a speech at the invitation to Governor Pence. And so, you know, there's probably some of that going on with this, too. But I think it'll be interesting to see who comes in and takes that spot because Bill Smith was so close to Mike Pence and will remain so.
Will remain a senior advisor.
And so whoever takes that spot is going to have to be, one, able to be credible with the governor and the first lady, and two, be able to have a measure of independence while his predecessor is really right over his shoulder. So it's going to be an interesting spot to fill.
Well, it's safe to say he's going to get a pay raise, too. As a private contractor with a firm, now the financial handcuffs are off in terms of what he was able to. I'm sure that's not the only consideration, but
he's kind of up to his own fundraising ability, probably.
Probably so.
A federal judge has ruled that the state of Indiana must recognize a gay couple's out-of-state marriage before one of the women dies. Nikki Quasney and Amy Sandler of Munster wanted Indiana to recognize their 2013 marriage in Massachusetts, where gay marriage is legal. Quasney has stage 4 ovarian cancer, and the couple wanted Judge Richard Young to order the state to recognize their marriage in Quasney's anticipated death certificate. He did. His decision, however, doesn't affect other lawsuits challenging Indiana's gay marriage ban. Or does it? John Ketzenberger, is this the first crack in Indiana's gay marriage ban?
It could be. It is interesting. And as the Attorney General has pointed out, this is a very limited decision by Judge Young. But a couple of things. Judge Young has several other cases pending before his court along these same lines. And in making his ruling, he noted that he thought that Indiana's ban might run afoul of equal protection under the U.S. Constitution. So I think that that might be a hint to where some of his thinking is. It'll be interesting to see how he rules on the larger case in this particular case and the others coming before him.
This ruling applies only to this one marriage, but it's hard to imagine. I'm not a lawyer, but it's hard to imagine that you can recognize one marriage and not recognize others.
I think that's probably true, and I think the phrase that was used this week in the context of the decision was a reasonable likelihood that this would be expanded to to this recognition of these marriages outside this particular couple. And if you look at the way that we talk about, you cannot look at this issue in isolation in Indiana. This is obviously going to end up in the U.S. Supreme Court. There are more than 60 federal lawsuits pending nationwide. A federal judge in Ohio has already said by the 14th, by next week, he's already said what he's going to decide, yeah. Which is kind of an interesting twist. What Judge Young did here, Judge Black in Ohio, federal judge, said that's exactly what he's going to do for the entire state Monday or Tuesday of next week. So
yeah,
writing's on the wall.
This is exactly what we talked about in the context of the marriage amendment, that regardless of what the legislature did, federal judges were going to handle this issue. And that's what the supporters of the marriage amendment were afraid of.
Yeah, we've been saying that for months here, that, you know, this is the beginning of what will be. I think the judge even referred to it as a tsunami of cases that are going to deal with this. And it's going to happen. It's going to end up in the Supreme Court. I think everybody understands that on all sides of this issue. And when it gets there, then we'll know how the states can deal with it after that. But it's coming. It's coming fast. And I look for it to happen. Probably they'll probably take it up in October if they can.
Will we see legalized gay marriage in Indiana this year?
Oh, I think we'll see. I don't know if it'll be this year. Maybe next year. But what's interesting from my perspective about this is that this just proves elections matter. Because in Virginia and Kentucky, you had similar decisions, and the attorney generals, both Democrats in those states, decided not to appeal. Here you had the Solicitor General arguing against allowing
a woman who had stage four. This is, Judge Young was appointed by Bill Clinton.
Definitely one of the elections that matter. And you have a woman with stage four ovarian cancer, and you're up there arguing that she shouldn't be able to pass the benefits on. It's a ridiculous position, and it's a waste of resources.
They haven't. Responsibility to say what the Indiana law is in presenting the case, and that's what they did. He did it respectfully in this case, and it shouldn't be, you know, painted
except
as
that he
being
said,
unrespectful.
Except that, he said, except that he said that the equities of this don't matter, and they do matter. Well, okay, they do matter.
It doesn't in the law in Indiana.
But this is such a limited appeal.
It doesn't in the law in Indiana.
He didn't have to, doesn't matter. It wasn't the law in Kentucky.
It wasn't
the law in Kentucky or in Virginia either.
One quick misconception. When you say this is why Republicans and others wanted to have the constitutional amendment voted on, it wouldn't have made one difference. You look at states where there is a constitutional amendment. I'm just saying that doesn't matter one
bit.
You still would have had the same tsunami of litigation.
I think we've said it over and over again for the last year here.
Moving on. When the Pacers play home games, people watching on TV and those in the fieldhouse see messages directing them to the internet and a page called A State That Works. During a game this week, it was a website that didn't work.
Now West forces it up and banks it in.
The message is on what's known as the apron of the basketball court. It also appears on basket supports and elsewhere. It was clearly visible during Sunday's Pacers game against the Atlanta Hawks. It's part of a Pacers sponsorship by the Indiana Economic Development Corporation, estimated at $1 million. It's also the same message that has appeared on Times Square video boards as part of a campaign that Commerce Secretary Victor Smith described this way.
A lot of people are just saying you need to tell your story better, so that's what we're doing. So it's part of a broader new branding strategy.
But this is the message that appeared at astatethatworks.com during the Pacers-Hawks game and apparently for a good portion of the weekend. It says the page you tried to access does not exist on this server. It gave no indication of what happened to the missing page. The website was back up and running this morning. This is what AstateThatWorks.com is supposed to look like. But state economic development officials declined interview requests to explain what happened. In emails, they blame routine maintenance conducted by the server hosting company known as Bluehost.
And he is
the good news may be that Sunday's game was a lousy one. Unless it was a reason for people to leave the television and look for the website. John Schwanis, does that strike you as a problem?
The Pacers' recent performance or or the website? Sure.
Maybe they're connected.
I think this is what qualifies as irony and what makes stories like this have some resonance and gives them some legs. When you have something that says, in this case, the state that works, it just begs the question, does the website work? And when it doesn't, I mean, it's not the end of the world. Nobody's going to lose his or her job. And I can't imagine that this is some company said, gee, I was going to come to Indiana and bring those 10,000 jobs, but because I couldn't get to the website on that Sunday afternoon. But it is a fun story, and I congratulate you for revealing
it. Thank you. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not the Obamacare website story, but if you do $1 million sponsorship, you should be able to get to the website and at least know that it exists. I mean, that message was not a routine maintenance message.
Well, that's right. So there's the problem, right? Is the state responsible because it didn't tell the host that Sunday afternoon during a game when that's being shown on television is a bad time to take the site down and fix it? Or did the person at the hosting place, did they just make a mistake? It is a mistake, and it is embarrassing. And I'm guessing that somebody's had a lot of discussion about what they're going to do going forward so that they get their money's worth next time.
Yeah, maybe some money back from the web hosting company.
Sounds like a good idea.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is this a problem?
I think it's a political problem. I'm not sure how many jobs it generates, but when you spend all your time criticizing the president on that stuff, and then you can't keep your own simple little web page together,
we're comparing
it looks,
this to the rollout.
Yeah, you wanna, but you know, it's the same idea.
It's not Obamacare, but it is.
It is embarrassing.
It's a lot of money spent on a sponsorship, site, and apparently not very much on the website.
This site gets 200 hits a day,
yeah,
and most of those are Monday through Friday when people in business are looking at this for this kind of information.
Yeah.
And so the server decides they're going to deal with it on Sunday when fewer people are watching it.
But it's still the wrong message up there.
No question it's the wrong message up there, but that's why it happened on Sunday.
Right.
That's
when
and
people
so are seeing the message. I'm just telling you. But that's when they did it, right, because not that's sure. Not when most of the in-state plays.
And I'm not,
so in the big scheme of things, this rate's a nothing. And you were a star for entertainment by putting this on here.
That was a good song.
I'm not sure it helps to say, though,
that's true.
To explain this away as saying this was not a government site, it was a private site, because that isn't the whole notion that government can't get the job done, but the private sector.
Well, but the whole idea of that site is to get you to go from there to IN.gov. And
presumably
the
that
site,
is,
which is a government
was working on Monday, right?
It was working on Monday.
You.
The state of Indiana expects a ruling in the next couple of weeks on an appeal to FEMA for disaster aid connected to January snowstorms. FEMA rejected an initial request for grants that would go to local governments to help cover the cost of snow removal. It would mean $3 million to the city of Indianapolis. The snow removal budget here was exceeded by $7 million overall. John Erickson of the Department of Homeland Security points out this is the third consecutive request for federal disaster aid to Indiana to be denied.
There's an opportunity, and we believe we have a strong case. It is our attitude that we're going to apply for that federal assistance.
And if we don't do something about the roads, if we don't fill that budget hole, we're going to be in even worse shape next year.
Stephanie Sample of the Department of Public Works there, and Delaney, are state and local governments too quick to go to Washington for help?
You know, I don't understand whether they hate Washington or they love it. You know, we were offered literally billions of dollars to set up a health care center here, okay, and would have resulted in tens of thousands of jobs and all kinds of income tax coming to Indiana, which frankly would have allowed us to take care of the roads ourselves. We turned that down, and we have a bunch in the Republican delegation who have voted against FEMA funding and against additional money for Hurricane Sandy victims.
So they're deciding based on those votes?
No, what I'm saying is they can't make up their minds whether they love Washington or they hate
FEMA money is tougher to get, and a lot of it has to do with
the country. It's tougher to get. There's no question about that. You can tell that Obama doesn't have to run for re-election again, or they wouldn't be turning people down all across
the
country.
You think this is a political decision?
Relief. I absolutely think it's a political
decision. It's a budget
decision
because you guys voted down their budget.
And they don't want to take care of Indiana. That's all there is to it.
Yeah. Okay.
But they didn't.
How
they
Indiana?
Didn't,
what's the difference between
nobody
us
else
Michigan
in the Midwest.
And
nobody
Illinois.
Else in the Midwest got a disaster declaration for the snow related to the polar vortex.
Two of them did.
Two of them?
I was told two of them did.
I didn't see
it on the list. I didn't see it on the. There have been some snowstorms that resulted in disaster declarations,
but not in the Midwest.
All right. Finally, whether you believe Marilyn Monroe's stardom was bigger than life or not, a 26-foot sculpture of the late actress really is. It greeted visitors in Carmel this week. It's called "Forever Marilyn" by Seward Johnson, and it's a curiosity wherever it goes. Sections of the 34,000-pound statue stopped here on the way from Palm Springs to New Jersey. The artist also created 15 statues featured throughout Carmel's Arts and Design District. Mike McDaniel, what's that say about Carmel?
That says that Carmel cares about the arts and culture of this country, and they've used it successfully to bring people to their community. If you go to Carmel and see the 15 sculptures that this person, this artist, has done, they're highly popular. There are people getting pictures taken with them every day. They had more people than they ever thought come look at this. It was there longer than they had to be because the people wouldn't give it up. So they've used art effectively in Carmel, and it's a good idea.
Well, it also attracts people like John, who went up there and looked at it from every single angle.
Does it add to the quality of life there?
That particular statue, it doesn't add to my quality,
but it obviously does to
John's.
Where's the rest of the statue?
Not sure. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Kenzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast starting Monday, or you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shello of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T, rethink possible.